today. We're back on 20 Years of 24 with Laura Harris. We welcome you to the podcast.
Thank you.
Today, you might remember her from 24 season 2 as Marie Warner. She started off as a good one, and then she transformed into the bad one. We found out she was working with Syed Ali Harris in season 2. So she was a great, memorable character on the show. So let's start off and on how'd you get involved with 24, and what was your experience like playing Marie Warner?
Gosh, I do have to reach far back into the archives. I think I just auditioned. And if I remember correctly, there were only like 2 lines in the audition, which is sort of a strange way to to make a mark, you know. But thankfully, they did what they needed to do. Yeah, and then of course, I'm sure you guys know that the actors have no idea, or most of them have no idea what's going to happen to their characters. So, I just was like, it's like a small supporting role, and we'll see what happens. And then they watch and like try to mull what would be the most sort of fantastic, absurd twists as they go along. And you know, that was a good choice, I think. For no one was expecting it.
No, I mean Justin. I'm jealous of Justin because Justin watched it years after it started and binged it and binged a lot of the years, whereas I was watching in real time. And I remember sitting in front of the TV and going, "What?" Like at that point, there was one other. I guess in 24, there had been maybe one or two other big twists that you went, "Oh, didn't see that coming."
Totally.
This was the next one. And this was, I think, the first one of the season for me, because it was like, did not see that coming from a mile away, which is why I love 24.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. I found she was so like banal and the character was so, I don't know, just a spoiled rich girl. And I feel like those kinds of girls, which that's how she appeared to be initially. And
right.
So those kind of girls kind of shut down, you know, it's not very, you don't really want to hang out with them too long on screen. You're just like, oh, you know, like I don't want to be in the same room as a spoiled rich girl. But so that's another, I think, thing that was surprising about it.
It's lots surprising. There was a private investigator involved. There's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
and you turn out to be the one with the golden gun, so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked to Bob Cochran, and he said the initial plan for 24. Was that it would be a wedding.
Yes.
Because the urgency of a wedding and the relentless nature of it. But that just didn't work for the first season. But I said, man, that you guys worked it into the That's beginning right. of the second season.
That's right.
Because it was all about the wedding. And again, Marie was all about, as you said, that character about, this is all about me. This is the planning. This is, you know, you're going to ruin my wedding. Don't ruin my wedding.
Okay.
and again, it's that, had us going that, man, this is, she is so concerned about anybody messing up this wedding, and it's, this is her day.
I love your generous take on it. I prefer that. I'm gonna say that from now on.
I was watching it in real time, man. That's where I was. Hey, for years I've DJed weddings. I used to DJ weddings, and my rule was, as long as the bride is happy, nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. Oh, it works in real life, I'm telling you.
I'm sure. Yeah, the amount of energy they must generate that just sort of spills over everything else. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you were the bride who was trying to, you know, run and chaotically plan this wedding. And so you had us thrown that this was what it was all about.
That's true.
And little did we know. Little did we know. At what point did you find out what the real story was?
When I read the scripts, when the script came in, I think I was in my trailer and they'd sort of deliver, you know, knock, knock, here's your new scripts. What? Yeah. You know, like, it was so cool. And it was a blast. I mean, what a gift to be able to just sort of have that much fun and get tortured and learn a few words of Arabic and, you
know, wear wigs. And, you know, wear wigs, the whole deal.
Yeah, they gave me a wig. It's so nice.
They did.
So
they
thoughtful.
Did. Yes. You wanted to get out of there. I mean, Marie wanted to get as far away from there as possible. That was the twist of the season. And and if I remember correctly, I think there was like a 6-week break at that point. Because in the early seasons, they would take like 5 or 6 weeks off. And what? So you're sitting in front of the TV and you're going, I got to wait a month to find out what. You served that to me cold and then boom. She was so sweet.
I know we can never go back, but I love that. I love having to wait. It's such it feels so quaint now, but I love having to wait.
I agree. The anticipation and everything about it. Yeah. Justin, do you remember the moment of the reveal though?
I do. Yes, that was a big shock.
The agent gets shot. They're sitting there and they're saying, "I think I might know who knows." And he's down. And I know we said we wouldn't get specific, but I would like to talk about the tear. There was a tear in your eye because Reza is standing there, and he's going, "What are you doing? What's going on?" And there was enough of a tear to say, "There's still a human in there."
Oh, I think I loved him. I think I loved him.
Yeah.
And I think that's where that tear was true love.
That was true love. With the true love with a bullet.
That's right. It was just inconvenient timing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This could have we could have worked this out in other circumstances, but
I do remember Rodney, the DP. He gave me a great, because there was sort of there was a great shot. Because it went like from the face, like a zoom shot to like, the gun firing right in the middle of his forehead.
Right.
And that, took a bit of, it was a great idea, but it certainly had to be done properly. And that, and Rodney gave me a great tip, which is totally critical. And I would pass it on to anyone else having to do that shot, which is that like, I was blinking too much. And just keep your eye, basically like if you're ever in one of those moments where it's like a standoff, and you're having to do an intense scene with like timing involved, just stare, never close your eyes, keep your eyes open. Wow. And so frankly, he's probably the reason why that tear fell, because if you keep your eyes open that long, you're gonna get a couple of juicy tears going down just at the right time.
It's heartbreaking and extremely effective.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, it wasn't masterful acting. It was Rodney's great tip.
You don't have to tell us otherwise. We'll remain ignorant on that for sure. No, that was good. What was the thrill of becoming that character?
Well, the topic was very just in the news and very much on everyone's minds and hearts in that time. So it was really interesting doing a show that was like, I would go to the grocery store and stuff and people would like call me evil or like, there was just like a lot of interaction around like the political heightened topic.
As if you were, that was really you.
Yeah. And of course they do that with any character. It doesn't have to be about a political topic, but I was feeling and thinking about it more because of that. I think, so that made it really interesting and kind of fragile or, like the topical nature of it. And then, and being able to sort of immerse in that was interesting at the time when it was so, when everything was so fraught around all the racism happening and just really intense scene. So that's a rare thing, I think, to be involved in something that's so topical and then also so fast, like it's not like one movie that's sort of involved in it. It's like as it happens television. Which is really crazy.
Reflecting what was really happening in the world.
Yeah. I think sometimes, I may be wrong, like these are the kind of thing I'm not great remembering, but like they had to sort of alter the script so that it wasn't as accurate as like what was going on in real life. It was so it was so tense and tender. So that was interesting. And then of course, Kiefer is like just an epic human being. He's such a beautiful person to learn from, just in terms of acting and producing and being an on-set leader. And I'd never worked with anyone who worked that hard, that many hours. So like just like a robot, but then just this gift of emotion and that combination is just he really blew my mind. So
you say you don't meet many people like that. In the business,
That can sustain that kind of output and keep it that excellent.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just remarkable.
Yeah.
And he really did. So that was another standout sort of like a takeaway. You know, it's something I keep in my heart about that experience. And then the other thing I would say is Sarah. She was, you know, I was never really a girly girl. And I was quite young when I did that project. And I don't think I'd ever had like a facial or a manicure or a pedicure. She was like, you know, when she found this out, she was like, she just like took me in hand and older sistered me. And like, I had a facial for the first time in my life with you. So that was all completely new. You know, I didn't really think about beauty in that way. And she was like, oh, girl, no. Let's just handle this problem.
I'm going to be your big sister.
It was beautiful. So wow. She was really lovely too.
That's wow. Amazing. Amazing. I mean, Justin and I are both Canadian.
Yeah,
and we take special pride. We take special pride when, you know, Kiefer is, and when we hear these things about Kiefer being, you know, being the type of person that he is, and to have, you know, more Canadians on the show is certainly extremely important to us.
That's true. And I also have to give a shout out to John Kassar. He's extraordinary. What a gift of a human being. I remember him very fondly as well.
Another fine Canadian.
Yeah, I know. That's what made me think of it.
What was your experience like working with, you know, the writers like Joel and Bob and Howard? How'd you like that part of 24?
Yeah, I mean, they work so hard. I mean, they're working round the clock to keep it like fresh and happening and all that stuff. So I didn't really have that much interaction with them, I don't think. And when we did see each other, it was always lovely. And it was, you could just tell they were like writing as they walked down the hall.
Yes.
You know, they were like writing in their brains and you didn't want to disturb them. So yeah, but they were lovely.
That's what we keep hearing. The writing was happening, you know, up to the day of, up until the moment of,
how you're going
to do it for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. This is also wasn't the first time you've been involved in a big plot twist that surprised an audience. I remember seeing the Faculty in the theater. That was a nice twist.
I think there's something about, you know, like the blonde, blue-eyed, sort of no one, you know, just like generic.
Nobody suspects you.
Yeah. And there's all these ideas that we have about what that means. And then they just saw maybe a glimpse of intelligence in me that was enough that you would believe that I would become the truly evil person. Like, so I always think there must be something, you know, because I think I got cast for that a lot, like appearing one
right
thing and like becoming
you could do no wrong kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is how naive I was. I had seen The Faculty. I knew how that ended, and I was still surprised when Marie. There's no excuse for me. My goodness.
Yeah, it's true.
But no, that was another great reveal. That's certainly one of those films that people that are in the know will talk about. And that twist at the end was so cool. It was just, you know, I remember again. I love the thrill of not knowing what's happening next. And you were a part of that and other projects for me as well. So thank you very much for that. And thanks for being Canadian.
Oh, yes. Thank you guys for being Canadian.
You know, we don't hear that very often, but, you know, it's nice to be thanked. We hear sorry a lot. We hear sorry, but we don't hear thanks.
I'm so relieved. I recently moved back to Canada, and I'm so relieved to just be able to say sorry as much as I want with no apology. And not having to, like, it doesn't mean anything than what it means, you know, like, you have to sort of, like, wean that out of your language when you're in the States.
Yes.
People really do take it as extremely passive as opposed to sort of polite.
Right.
And that can be problematic.
It's appreciated here.
Oh, it's just like a warm bath. I'm so happy.
What's on your plate these days?
Well, besides just like COVID being
you know,
a nightmare mastermind of all the things that it is, a while back I left acting to go to college. I got a scholarship to Berkeley, and I completely pivoted and took social ecology and
amazing
and systems design. Thank you. Yeah, I think I was about 34, and I started working on humane farms and doing a bunch of social ecology work and food justice work. And then I got tapped out of there before I finished the degree to go work in tech. So I worked in tech for like 8 years until I moved back to Canada last year.
Wow.
And, Yeah.
It's quite the pivot. That's great.
It really was surprising. So, and it was like the most incredible experience. It was just out of nowhere to be able to do that. And of course, I had my daughter in that time, and that was a real gift. But at the time, we didn't have the phrase for it, but now there's this phrase going around called humane tech.
Yes.
And we were definitely in that world
In
of
the
like,
forefront of that.
yeah. And trying to create something that actually helps us instead of hurts us, and help people connect instead of sort of become a zombie to the algorithms. And
Yeah. What fueled that change for you?
well, it's just I didn't take lightly that someone would give me a job offer at like in a mid like in my 30s for a total, I'd worked for 30 years as an actor, and I was just so when that job came, it felt like a miracle. I think I might have gone into like systems design or something else, but the job offer just made me pivot. And then the place, I was so lucky to be sort of, it was just a beautiful, like the place that, and the topic I was very interested in. I've always been a little bit like, when I use these softwares, I feel used. Like I don't think I think I'm too gullible a human being to use these effectively. Everyone else must be using them in these great productive ways that I don't understand, but it turns out, there's no neutrality there. They appear neutral, but they're not. So that feeling, other people like the engineers I was working with completely, they were trying to create things and thinking about that way back then, like people
Right.
who, early internet users who saw what had become of the internet and were concerned.
Right, yes.
And I got to work, really closely with some of those people, and we so it was super fun and very experimental. And I ran a film team, and our focus was really sort of helping people hear each other.
Wow.
Yeah,
See, in my other life, I was a lawyer, but
you
then
were.
I moved into public speaking. So I have a company where I, in pre-COVID, I would travel to schools and businesses and talk about social media safety, and
Interesting.
the idea of being careful of how you're treating each other, being careful of, the
Yeah.
way you're using the internet.
Yeah.
And it's extremely fulfilling. I've shifted it in the fall. I'm going to go completely online with it, but I
Amazing.
found each opportunity to encourage a school full of students to say, be kind, treat each other well. Like this, don't disqualify yourself from getting a job because of something you said when you were 15.
Totally. Yeah.
And I sounds like you enjoyed what you've been doing in the same way that I enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, that's incredible work.
Because the internet
Good for
can be
you.
used badly,
I
as
mean, I
we've
think it is
seen.
being used badly,
Yeah, yeah.
and we're being used badly.
Yes.
And so we have to sort of not even self-advocate. I think now there's enough people that feel that feeling that are like, what are we? That's why that Netflix movie, Social Dilemma, was so
Oh,
popular.
yeah.
I mean, I think like 100 million people watched that movie. That's an insane number.
Yes.
So,
It was encouraging that people that many people
yeah.
watched it. Yeah.
I think that just comes from that feeling of like, yeah, it feels icky. Something feels icky. I don't
Yeah,
know what
yeah, yeah, yeah. And
it
documentaries don't usually get that kind of an audience.
is. Not at all. I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
nothing gets that. The Super Bowl doesn't get that kind of an audience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Oscars didn't even get that.
No. That's right.
Yeah. No, that is fascinating. What a cool pivot into something that, again, you're passionate about.
Totally. I think the common ground is acting. What I loved about acting, being a serious introvert, was just listening. Like when it's done at its best for me, it's really like when you're really listening to each other in this sort of totally alternate reality. Like you're really hearing each other in your character, and so yeah, like active listening has become an obsession. I mean, it creates peace. It's utterly unbelievable. Just people who could never, ever, ever get along, if they're able to just actually active, like they do a little bit of listening training and really and just sit down and try to like apply it. It's crazy. It's crazy what happens. I mean, it's like it changes. It's like literally, if we could, my secret private project, which I'm scared, I don't know if I should say it or not, but I think I want to create a curriculum where it's like general curriculum for K through grade 8 or so, where
Wow.
kids just learn to actively listen, and it's like as like taken for granted as learning to read or public speak or anything else that we do, there's a lot of attention on.
Your timing is pretty on for that. My wife is downstairs teaching a class online because that's where we're at in Ontario. And the need for active listening has probably never been more necessary than when you're trying to corral a group of students online and keep them engaged.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and while they're playing video games and everything else.
Yeah. You know everything's out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You know Netflix is on somewhere. And boy, I love that idea. I would apply that curriculum in my teaching because active listening has become a lost art.
Yeah, if it even ever was, you know, really applied to begin with. I think the key thing is the really young kids, because by the time you get them, trying to get into high school and you're like, listen, they're like, fuck you.
Exactly.
Like, whatever. It has to be in that subconscious growing, that the ABC stage.
Yeah.
And then hopefully that'll impact the parents as well. And then world peace, guys. Come on.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I want to see that curriculum. I would encourage you to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm in it. I'm in it right now. That's where I spend my time when I'm not with my daughter. So
awesome. So in the last 8 years, 9 years, have you had people that walked up to you and kind of hesitantly said, "Are you?"
Totally. Well, actually, there's a funny anecdote from school when I went to college. I mean, I was a 34-year-old. I took the SATs with, you know, thousands of seventeen-year-olds in Tribeca.
Yep.
And it's amazing. I passed. I studied hard. That did not happen as a fluke. I studied very hard for the SATs.
Yep.
And when I actually went to class, and so, like, I didn't have any idea. I was very naive and clueless about, like, the level of attention that sort of and study that there was in academia. There was around television and film.
Right.
I'm embarrassed to say. So one of the classes I was in was a writing class that was about television seriality. And I looked at the class. You know, I sat down in the first class and I look at the list of shows that we're going to study. 24 was on it, and it was like a list of maybe, I don't know, 10 to 12 shows, maybe 8 to 10 shows. And it was like, holy shit, I've either been on these shows or there's one degree of separation. Like the creator on the last show I worked with created this show or, you know, and I was in shock. Like, and the prof, when I left the classroom, he was like, you seemed as shocked to see that list as I was to see you in this class. And I was like, yeah, I had no idea. So that was a real wake up call. You know, just how much, you know, you can use just one episode as an object to really, like,
right,
explore the world.
Right? Yeah. But you've got the X-Files, there's so many different things that you've been a part of that were probably on that list. You're absolutely
right. That's true.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah. And was the prof thrilled to have you in the class?
He was very supportive. He had a lot of work to do because I was, you know, I'm coming in old. So he was
I got to say, I teach a lot of courses I teach now at the college are second careers. Yeah. And so I do a course called Back to School Strategies right off the bat, because when it's been, you know, a couple of years since you've been out of school, it's getting back into that mode. But I work all year with people who are in their second careers or third careers.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. I find the same, that's kept me busy. But it certainly is awesome to see somebody say, you know what, I want to do this now, and I want to become this. And it's the hardest thing to do in so many ways. But I applaud you for doing that. And
yeah, I think going back, I mean, I'd never been, and to me, it was just a gift. I'm like, wait a minute, you get to come to a place where all you have to do is learn, and they teach you amazing shit. Like,
mm-hmm, yeah,
this is heaven on earth. Like, yeah. I can't believe, and you're actually forced to do it. Like, I can't pretend, like, I have to do it. I was just in heaven. I mean, I cried the first, like, few days walking onto campus. I was like, there were tears in my eye. It was like embarrassing. Like, I really was. It was sad. So
don't be embarrassed. That's awesome. Don't be embarrassed. That's it's a big step, but I see so many people that are excited and just exactly what you described. To be back on campus, or to be on campus for the first time in their lives, and be doing something that is different than what they've done for the last 10, 15 years.
That's beautiful. What are you teaching them?
I teach a lot of people that are moving into the hospitality industry.
Cool.
So I teach dealing with difficult people, some customer service, a lot of life skills, cultural awareness is a big one. I usually start with that one.
Yeah.
And like I said, back to school strategies, how to get back into the mode of school.
Wow. So the listening stuff really, I mean, I can imagine that really, it's so clear to me when, did you guys see the, it was on Twitter, Scott Seiss?
No.
Oh, I'll send it to you guys. It's very funny. He's like an employee at IKEA, and he's like talking to hard customers.
Okay.
And it's pretty funny.
I love that stuff.
Yeah.
I use it in class all the time.
It's really good.
Cool. Well, we talked about one of the things you mentioned was that when people come up to you and they're upset with you, you know, because they thought you were really Marie Warner in real life. But right. is there a memorable, like a good fan interaction that you experienced that stands out? I mean, you did talk about the prof a minute ago, which was great.
Yeah, for 24, they were all, I would call them all good. Even if they were like unimpressed, you know, right. I was like, yes, you know, like, they don't like me.
I did my job.
Yeah, but the real standout, I mean, I'm not to bring in another project, but you mentioned it with Sarah at the top, that I had a standout moment. I was on like a dance club floor at some like really sweet bands. Like we were just like dancing out,
yeah,
really having a good time. And this young girl came up to me and she was like, "Oh my God, Daisy Adair!" And I was like, yeah, hi. She's like, and we're both just dancing. She's like, "I wrote my thesis on you." And I was like, "Oh my God,
really?
You do that?" Yeah. So that was a very lovely.
How cool is that?
As we dance. Yeah.
I live in Windsor, so I'm right on the border of Detroit.
Oh, cool.
And I had to go to Detroit to buy the set. So I own both seasons plus the movie. But I had to buy them in Detroit because I couldn't find them in Canada at all at the time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's so strange how there's this cross-border. I can't even get a book.
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing.
It is very strange. Like, I have a P.O. box in Detroit, but I haven't been able to access it for a year.
Oh, my God.
And I get four times the price on shipping, and that usually discourages me from ordering whatever I'm going to order.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. But I remember going to a store in Detroit and buying both seasons because I love that series. I absolutely loved it. It was nothing like it. There was nothing like it on TV.
It was unusual. Yeah, it had a moment.
How did you wind up on that one?
Same thing. Just auditioned my butt off. I was just a working actor auditioning my butt off.
Awesome. Awesome. Persistence.
Yeah. And luck also. I mean, like, you know, a lot of luck.
Well, I want to go back to the one scene, which I loved as well, was when Bob Warner and Kate come in to see you in the cell.
Oh.
what was going on in your head during that scene, if you remember?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's that was a very easy scene. I did all I had to do was just like sort of hate them and not that I hated them, but
no.
And do nothing except look evil, which of course comes very easily. So there wasn't much. I would say that the scene that really stood out for me was the torture scene with Kiefer. Like,
well, yes,
you know, because it took, you know, obviously we had way more time with it, and he is just so fun to get that close, like to act that closely with.
Right.
So that was a joy. That's like in my body somewhere as well.
Not many people that have that confrontation are alive to date. Do you have an idea where Marie is right now?
No, I think she might be one of the last men standing.
She is.
I think everyone else is dead except her.
We've thrown on the idea of doing it. They do a show called 24 Loose Ends and have all the loose ends get together and, you know, stand up to Jack.
That's so funny. Or just like make it a comedy.
Yes. Yes. Like a sitcom, an 80s sitcom.
Like
we're all roommates.
People. That's right. That's good.
I like that idea better. I like that idea better.
We found each other. Yeah, we found each other.
If that sitcom came up, would you come out of retirement?
Oh my God, what a dream! I mean, yeah, I started auditioning again this year, so I may come out of retirement.
Okay.
But yeah.
I mean, we hear rumblings, and like I said, there's not many that are still around in the, you know, in the 24 universe that survived, you know, certainly facing Jack Bauer.
Oh my God, are you kidding? I would do anything. That everyone's such a joy. Yeah.
Okay.
To play with. Yeah.
We're as fans, we're trying to push it through a little bit and
do it. Get it done. I'll be
part of the reasons. Part of the reasons we're doing the podcast. So. Awesome. Yeah, we're Laura, we are so grateful that you took today to hang out with us, and you shared some really awesome stories.
Oh, it's been a total pleasure.
And where you've gone since then. So
yeah,
thank you very much.
Thank you for asking me. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much. We're talking to both Warner sisters now. This is great.
Yes. And I'm going to text her right now.
Do you think you're the good Warner sister is maybe the last question.
No, I can't lie that badly. I mean, come on.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, too.
Typical barrister.